The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now we're joined by the Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless. Minister, thanks indeed for coming in to us. You're going to create an additional 42,000 beds for students over the next 9 years. A quarter of them are going to come from digs. Have we been transported back to the 1980s?
So, look, I was delighted to launch the plan today, got cabinet approval this morning, and the ambition is 42,000 new beds into the system over the term of the plan. I will be working as quickly as possible to front load as much of that as possible, and the strategy starts today. In actual fact, we've already started. So, for example, over the last 12 months in the preparation of the strategy, we've invited the colleges and the campuses to submit proposals where they have lands, where they have land banks, where they have campus sites already to go. And we now have 53 proposals on the table. We'll be matching that. That was from the technological universities. We'll be inviting what we call the traditional universities to submit their plans now as well. And ultimately, all those sites are opportunities to build out purpose-built, high-quality student accommodation on campus or in around campus. The plan is it's a public-private style partnership, public lands, but private operators will be invited to pitch for these sites to put their best foot forward in terms of a tender proposal. And then they will pair up with the host college. So the college would then enter into an agreement where they would say, right, a private operator comes in, builds the accommodation. The college would then sublet or let a significant body, probably all, but certainly a very high percentage of those beds for the benefit of their students. It's kind of a risk-reward model. The college gets the benefit of having the beds on site. The students get supply into the system. The developer gets the certainty in terms of financing the project that there's a multi-year arrangement in place. It's something that's been used elsewhere internationally very successfully across a number of cities. It hasn't been used in Ireland before, but at a time when we need to ramp up the number of beds and drive as much efficiency and delivery as possible, utilising that private sector expertise and agility while matching it with public assets. And ultimately, the land and the properties revert to the state. The state will own the properties at the end of all this.
Okay, we'll come back to digs in a moment. Like, there's a logic there in what you're saying. I suppose the problem is, and I look at some of the accommodation that has been built on campus, it is fantastic. It looks brilliant. I mean, it's a million miles away from some of the kips I stayed in when I was a student.
Me and you both.
But it's also a million miles away price-wise. They're all really expensive. I mean, is that going to change? I mean, it's private investment. They're going to want bang for their buck.
Yeah, so the other thing, just you mentioned some of the kips you stayed in, and me too. You know, I was a student as well, and I stayed in, it was four of us to a room at one stage. Not suggesting that for anybody, and for the avoidance of doubt, that's not part of this strategy. But look, we've come a long way since then. But it is important, having said that, I've published a student accommodation design guidelines. That is a set of architectural blueprints that, rather than reinventing the wheel every time, rather than every single college, every single site, the 53 and more, saying, let's figure out how we do this, I've published a set of guidelines that say, right, here's how you do 100 beds, here's how you do 200 beds, here's your shared laundry spaces, your shared living spaces, etc., stairwells, all that kind of thing, to optimise the number of beds in each building. So that will actually help them get started, and also that will fast track to the planning system, because there's a thing called a Section 28 process, which, without getting too technical about it, it means that it's pre-approved. If you're following the guidelines that I've published for your student accommodation build, it gets fast tracked to the planning process. It's far more likely and far quicker to actually get
approved. Okay, so this will be fast tracked. Planning has been an issue.
100%. And I want to get shovels in the ground. And I would say, to be honest, we've seen some degree of overspecking in some of the student builds of recent years.
Too swanky.
I know UCD Students' Union had a protest, actually, because what they call the gold standard accommodation. And colleges are having one eye to tourists in the summer months as well sometimes. And, you know, I don't blame colleges trying to maximise the revenue. But ultimately, student accommodation is for students. It is what it says on the tin. So I want to deliver as many beds as possible, working towards 42,000, high quality, affordable beds on campuses or in around campuses through the strategy, just in the affordability in terms of the rent prices, as well as tackling the viability.
So are you confident rents will come down if this supply becomes...
So ultimately, if you look at any supply chain, the more supply you can feed into the system, the more competitive it gets and prices begin to regulate. But if we look at, say, the affordability side of it, I'm also putting real money into students' pockets. I've put 176 million euro on the table by way of student supports. So just in this year's budget, for example, I increased all of the non-adjacent grant amounts. Non-adjacent are the students that travel up to college. They're not living next door. They're the ones that are travelling 30 kilometres or more. And all of those students had their grants increased by significant amounts. And I will continue to do that during this plan. So we're investing, we're putting money in students' pockets to help towards the cost of rent or indeed their commute. We're helping with viability. And before this plan was published today, 15,000 student beds of planning permission around the country and are lying there untouched because it hasn't been viable, because there hasn't been a framework for the colleges to partner with the providers and say, let's get this going. So this is very much a viability strategy. It's unlocking
how will
those
it be
sites
different
moving
then,
on.
How will it be different then this time? Why
so
would they
had
be
no
built
framework.
Now?
So for example, in the past, a provider that had a site with planning permission had no certainty who was going to take it. They were putting a finger in the air. Will this rent? Will it not? Now they can partner with the college. The college can say to them, and this is the first time TUs have been allowed to borrow, which they've called for years. I've given them the strategy. They can now say, well, we will commit to 80% of your beds. We will sign a 10 or 20 year agreement that us, the college, will take those beds from you. The provider can then go back to the bank or the finance house and say, I've got a commitment, a long-term a piece of paper. That gives them the confidence they can borrow. The rates are more competitive. Suddenly it becomes viable. Also things like the VAT rate reduction on apartment building. So all the viability measures that we've put into the wider housing situation are also being adopted in this.
Okay.
And it's really important that this is complementary to the wider housing proposal. This should not be students competing with the private sector. This is 42,000 additional beds into the system.
You sidestepped at the beginning my question about digs.
Yeah.
Are we returning to the 1980s?
Yeah.
I mean, is it a quarter of the beds provided? I mean, will the supply be there? Do people still want to do that?
So
do students want to stay
in digs?
What
we have found in the last couple of years, so over the last 3 years, we began a promotional campaign around digs. There's a rental room relief. Householders can get up to 14,000 euro rent without having to pay tax on it. So very often, a retired person, a person living alone, a family that needs some extra funds, that have a few spare rooms, empty nesters, all kinds of people that have spare rooms in their properties, they're encouraged to make that available. And what we have found through promotional campaigns is the number of digs beds available has increased from 2,000 to 5,000 in just 3 years. It's already doubled in the space of 3 years. I think there's a lot more appetite to do that. For the students that want it, it can be a good option. It can be a secure, comfortable option. Very often there's a meal provided, there's a dinner, it's a home from home. For other students, they may not want that, and that's absolutely fine. It's by no means the central plank of the strategy, but it is one amongst many arrows in the quiver to try to provide this magnitude of beds.
Okay, all right. Just very lastly on this, are you confident, because the big criticism from the opposition is this whole plan will not address affordability. Are you confident that it will bring down prices and bring down rents?
So just on the student affordability in particular, I have carved out an exception. The rent rules that were introduced as part of the wider RPZ reform allows rents to be reset every time a tenant leaves. For students, I've negotiated an exception to that rule. For students only, they will have a minimum of 3 years, regardless how many students come and go every summer. We all know students come into a property, leave it in the summer. They will be protected. So regardless how many come and go, there's a 3-year minimum window. That's really important, and that's there in law. The other thing I'd say is that the best way to tackle prices is by increasing supply. This plan is doing that to the tune of 42,000.
Okay. All right. A couple of other things pertaining to your brief. Last year in the budget, the third level fees, a registration fee was reduced from 3,000 to 2,500. It had been temporarily, there had been 2,000 for a couple of years. Mm. You brought it back to 3,000 and then you reduced it by 500 permanently. Yeah. Can we expect another cut in this year's budget?
So you asked me that last time I was on the show, and I'll give you the same answer. We'll address that as we come into the budget process. What I will say is more students are getting more support than ever before. So up to 120,000 household income is now getting a SUSE grant. I mean, that's a very high figure. Traditionally, when I was growing up, with people in disadvantage, people coming out of poverty or unemployment that got SUSE grants. You now have households on six-figure salaries getting SUSE grants. That's unprecedented. But of course, I'll continue to explore what I can do to support students more. But it is important that we target the most support to those
you're
that need
pushing
most.
You're pushing for it?
Well, what I'm pushing for is targeted measures. I want to understand that I'll be hosting an event next month in Portlaoise, bringing together all the stakeholders, including the squeeze middle, and saying, what is it that people need? What is the intervention that will help them get that child into college? Or if you're a student, that will get you into the next year. Is it a cost of travel? Is it a cost of accommodation? Is it the SUSL grant? Is it the threshold? Is it the income disregard if you want to work weekends or part-time in the summer? What, there's many, many ways we can slice this. And I want to say, rather than giving a blanket, you know, free for all, can we actually do something that is fair, is progressive, and gives the most help to people that really need it most?
All right. That sounds like a no.
We'll see in the budget.
All right. Can I ask you, you will be aware of this, Minister. A number of weeks ago on this show, we interviewed a young woman, Caitlin, not her real name, who told us she was the victim of rape 3 years ago, after which a photograph was taken without her knowledge or consent and shared and sent anonymously to university staff accounts and to hundreds of students. Can I ask you... UCD's handling of this case, are you happy with how UCD handled it?
So first of all, I want to extend my support and good wishes to the young lady at the centre of this. I have been in correspondence with her and I'm due to meet her very shortly. It's a horrific story of what's happened to her.
Sorry, to the interview. You have been talking to her and...
I'm arranging to meet her.
Right,
We've been exchanging emails and I'm meeting her very soon, I think actually next week.
Okay.
So that's something I'm very keen to do. I want to offer every support that I can. I want to hear her story firsthand. I've listened to it on your programme and on other channels, and it's a really harrowing account and it's some horrific experiences. Other representatives, to be fair, Jen Cummins and others in the Dáil have raised the issue with me. And I want to listen to that student and see what can we do to help her. I've also independently asked for a review of safeguarding in terms of what the HEA are doing, what UCD are doing, what processes are in place. Very often institutions are focused on the academic rigour and the governance, you know, managing timetables, etc. And that pastoral care, that human experience, we just need to make sure that that support...
Could UCD have handled that pastoral care better, do you think?
I don't want to pass any judgment right now. I don't know, I suppose, enough of the facts about it to say. I think, to be fair to the college, they did offer meetings, they engaged with the student. I'm told that the head of medical, the president herself, Orla Feely, made herself available for meetings. So they certainly, and indeed the High Court actually did have a hearing on this, and they said that the college had done everything right from a procedural point of view. Does that mean they did everything right by the book, but maybe there could have been a bit more pastoral support? I don't know at this stage. I've asked for a review of that and I've asked that all be looked at, because if there's anything we can improve in the system, I very much want to do it. But I look forward to meeting the young lady in the next couple of days and hearing her story firsthand.
Okay, thank you for that, Minister. Just before we let you go, just on a more outside your immediate bailiwick, can I ask you, obviously this plan has been launched by the government. It will come in from midnight, these discounts, reductions in taxes on petrol and other measures. A lot of criticism from the opposition. I've heard a lot of voxes as well from people across the country saying this isn't enough. It's too little. It doesn't even begin to deal with the huge increases, particularly in home heating oil. Nothing really there for people in terms of home heating
look,
oil.
I suppose this is a very fast moving, evolving situation. And I'll give you an example. The government, it was trailed over the weekend that the government was minded to do this. In the meantime, President Trump announced yesterday he was ceasing hostilities for a couple of days in Iran. Oil markets, crude oil figures began to actually come down again. It's a very volatile world. What can happen in 24 hours happens very quickly. The government has responsibility, I suppose, to manage its books and to support citizens in a way that's sustainable and affordable long term. So there's a 4-week support mechanism has been put in place. I think that's only right and proper. But it's very hard to look beyond one night to the next. I know that people are feeling at the pumps. I know when they go to fill their home heating tank. I completely get that. Ultimately, the long-term solution here is not to be dependent on fossil fuel producers outside of the continent. You know, whether it's Russia, whether it's Iran, whether it's the United States. The longer that we continue to buy fossil fuel, we need to look at our energy mix. If you look at other European countries, with things like hydro, with things like nuclear, with things like renewables, all in the mix. In Ireland, we're very dependent on fossil fuels and we're doing our best to ramp up renewables, but it's slow. And again, go back to the planning discussion at the start of it. One thing is this government is very determined to do with speed up planning, speed up delivery, build out infrastructure, and that ultimately will bring prices down for everybody, including in the short and long term around energy.
The Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless. Thank you indeed for talking to The Hard Shoulder this evening.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.